A medical expert recently said that listening to the Ron Van Dam Show can improve your IQ. Okay, her area of expertise is toe fungus, and she said it in a bar, drunk, to Ron. But still, a medical expert said so. You and your toe fungus are listening to the Ron Van Dam Show on New England Broadcasting.
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, good night. It's the Ron Van Dam Show.
Hey, sit down, will ya?
Hold on tight, things can get a bit weird, if you like that sort of thing.
Will you please sit down? I can't see the exit sign. That's better. Hey, welcome to the program. It is the Ron Van Dam Show. I am that person. A very interesting show for you today. I'm going to examine the molecular structure of a cow. Ooh, sounds interesting. No one's ever done that. All right. It's Friday. Oh my God. It's the beginning of the weekend. Oh, wow. I was watching a local news channel, and the news anchor started the show by saying, "Well, we made it." What the hell does that mean? What do you mean, "Well, we made it"? And his inference is that we made it through the week, and this is Friday, the start of the weekend, and his comment is, "Well, we made it through." Oh, my God. Kind of life do you have? You live to make it through the week? What is this, punishment to you or something? Oh my God. Is your job so horrible, sitting on a TV show saying the news and getting paid for it? Is that so bad for you? Wow. Really? Seriously? Anyway, don't treat Fridays like that. That's pathetic. It's a horrible way to live. Every day that you're alive is a gift. Ron, that was so beautiful. I know it was beautiful. Every day's a gift. Oh my God. I wake up in the morning and I say to myself, this is a gift. Yeah, I don't care about Christmas. I don't care. I don't care to get gifts. I don't need 8 gifts on Hanukkah. Every day is a gift. And just being able to see your smiling face is also a gift. Oh my God, this is such bullshit. I can't believe it. Did you buy that at all when I was doing that? Did you go, oh wow, Ron's really like, he's so deep. No, I'm not deep. Actually, I am deep. Too deep for you. But it's Friday, and we made it through the week. Oh, my God, don't say that. What kind of job do you have, by the way? You know, when you look back on your life, you're going to kind of evaluate yourself. And you're going to be really picky about it. You're going to look at your life, and you're going to say, What did I accomplish? Was this all a nice journey? And you're probably going to say, no, so it's time now to correct that. Do something that you're really into. I've talked about this before. It's part of my motivational speaking tour. Ron, you actually travel and do motivational speaking? No, I don't, but I say that I do. Yeah, you know, I motivate people. I motivate them. I motivate them to get a life. Everybody, when they're born, has all this crap all over them. You have to be washed off. But that's not the point. Everybody has some type of hidden talent. I don't care if you're a mental genius or a proclaimed idiot or somewhere in between, which would be the scale. Everybody has some type of special talent, something that they do really, 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 really well. Except you. So we have to find your special talent. Perhaps you sing, or you think you can sing. That's the fun part, man. Did you ever meet somebody like that who sings all the time and they think that they are a singer? And if they wanted to, they could be a professional singer. Do you ever meet one of these people? And when they sing, they're so off key and it's so annoying, but they think that they're good at it. That's the other side of the coin. I say to find something that you can do that is special to you, that you really excel at. And then the point is you have to really be able to do that because some people really can't. Oh, yes, I am a singer. I sing all the time. I have a great voice. I'm going to tap you on the shoulder and tell you, no, you don't. But you don't do that. You leave those freaking people alone. Let them think they can sing because that's what it's all about. You know, Donald Trump taught me one thing, and believe me, one thing only. And that is you don't have to be good at something. You just have to walk around saying that you are and really believe that you are when indeed you actually suck. You can walk around and say, I am perfect. I can do everything. I can solve everything. I'm the greatest. I'm fantastic. Just like the Trump thing. But in actuality, you are the devil's handmaid. You are the lowest piece of scum ever created by whoever created you. You are incapable of emotions, feelings, intelligence, common sense, completely void, nothing. And there's the irony. All you have to do is believe it. It's your perception. Oh, what color is that? Oh, that's green. Oh, no, it's not. It's purple. No, it's green. No, it's purple. I see it as purple. Oh, really? You have something wrong with your eyes? I don't know. But I see purple. But it's green. No, it's not. It's purple. Okay. And that's what I'm talking about. Perception is like 100% of the law. Even if you murder somebody, and please don't do that. It is frowned upon these days. Even if you murder somebody and you go to court, you can plead insanity. Like, I didn't know what I was doing. Oh, okay. All right. It's perception. It's the perception. So, I don't know. I don't know what to tell you. For once in my life, I don't know what to tell you. I have an interesting guest coming up a little bit later in the program, and I don't know if you'll find it interesting or not, to be honest with you. It's all a matter of perception. I can go to the movies, and I can sit there, and I can watch a film that totally sucked the raw big one. And yet, when I hear the reviews for it, it's the most fantastic film in the world. There's a film that I think won the Academy Award. And I thought it sucked. From beginning to end, I was bored off my ass. I wanted to leave. I thought it was stupid, boring, incredibly awful. And it won the Academy Award. And the film is... Everywhere and up there and then through your nose and everywhere, somewhere, but everywhere, but nowhere. I don't even know the exact name of this. Let me Google this thing and see if I can find out what it is. It was awful. Let me talk to Alexa here. What film won the Academy Award? Let's see what they say. Oh, here it is. Yeah. Okay. It was, it's everything, everywhere, all at once. That's what it is. And it was also best actor and best, hairstyles and everything, everywhere, all at once. That's kind of the way I felt about the film. It was everywhere. And it was everything. And it came at me all at once, and I couldn't take it. It was horrible. Actually, I thought it was nothing, nowhere, nothing came at me at all. That's my title for it. I just thought it was awful. But people who have seen it, Ron, have you seen Every Time, Everywhere, Every People, Every Life? I said, no, I have. Oh, you're going to love this. There's also a TV show that on Netflix, somebody's name. See, I can't remember this stuff because I never saw it. Or if I did, it was so forgettable. It's got somebody's name in it. And they said, watch this. It's a fantastic show. And I watched it. I was like, well, this sucks. And it's because my perception is different than your perception. Some people love calamari. I like calamari. I like the texture. I like eating squid. I don't know what to tell you. I don't even know what it is. Squid, octopus. I don't know. I have no idea. I don't know the difference. I don't really know the difference between an alligator and a crocodile. I'm sure they're both very tasty. I mean, I know. But, I like it. I go sometimes for lunch and I'll have some calamari. I mean, they don't call it octopus because it's like stupid. You know? Give me the diced octopus, please. You mean calamari? Oh, okay, I'm sorry, calamari, yeah. Other people like, oh, are you serious? Oh, that's a disgusting. Perception. We all have different tastes. Here's something funny that I saw yesterday on television, which blew my mind. My mind has been blown. It's been blown successfully. I was watching CNN. The cable news network, CNN. I like it. I think it's middle of the road. I like it. I'm watching CNN. All of a sudden, they go to a commercial. And the commercial is for Fox News. What? I'm confused now. I guess your rival can advertise on your station. And I guess you have to take it? I don't know if there's a law that you have to take it. Fox News, of course, as I said on yesterday's show, paid $750 million in a settlement. Fox News, as you know, because the evidence has been played already, the Fox News hosts, they tried to say that the election was a fraud and the voting machines were off. But they knew that it wasn't a fraud and they knew that that was not the case. They spread the lies. They did it on purpose, and they knew it. And that was a problem. So rather than be further embarrassed publicly by having even more information come out about how phony and horrible they are, they decided to settle out of court for $750 million, about $800 million, which is such an admission of guilt, it's not funny. So now apparently they know that they're, they have been tarnished greatly by reputation. So now they're on a campaign to claim that they are the number one news source for the country and they are fair and balanced and honest and truthful, which is not the case. And now they're spreading that lie. And if, again, as I said yesterday, the problem is that there's a good portion of America that is just freaking stupid. Anyway, that threw me for a loop. Your competitor can actually advertise on your network. Whoa, that's like a new step. All right, my guest is going to join us momentarily. But before we do that, I think it's time to just kind of take a look at ourselves and look introspectively and see why we do what we do. Yeah, it's a good idea.
You may not realize it, but we put these breaks in the middle of the Ron Van Dam Show to give you a moment to stop and think about the fact that you are listening to the Ron Van Dam Show, and maybe give you a couple minutes alone with your thoughts to reconsider some of your life choices, like one of those moments might be happening right now. Are you still here? Well, okay, if that's the way it's got to be. You are listening to the Ron Van Dam Show on New England Broadcasting.
Dr. Elizabeth Bro joins us now. She's written a very interesting guide book, one might say, History According to SAT. We're all familiar with the SATs and how they've changed over the years. Are they still changing?
Oh, yes, they certainly are.
Okay.
the new test is going to be very, very different, including it's not going to have any long passages on it.
Oh.
Yeah, it's going to be everything that you can see on a computer screen all at once to get rid of the scrolling, and they're taking out most of the stuff that I actually wrote my book about, which is sort of annoying.
Okay. is this basically being converted because of technology?
Yeah, basically that's what they did. They made it a computer test, and the long passages that I based the book on are being eliminated because they can't fit on one computer screen. Kids have to scroll up and down. And so they eliminated that, which I suppose is helpful. And they've also replaced the longer passages with some very short passages, some of which include poetry. But I don't think there's a history book in it. But for the current test, this book is very focused on all the different kinds of reading passages, history passages in particular, that I've read in like the last 10 or 11 years teaching SAT prep.
Mm-hmm.
And what I noticed is that a lot of my students got really, really confused by the history passages. And they just didn't understand what they were reading.
Yeah.
And after I got to one too many kids who told me that American slavery ended in 1945, I decided I better write some stuff down to help clear up some of these misunderstandings. And so that was my goal.
Interesting. You know, math has changed a little bit, but not really. And English, we don't write script anymore. Okay. But history seems to be a contention these days. It's so different than when I went to school. History was history. Now everything's refuted. It seems a little confusing, but it's still part of the SATs in a revised fashion or in an old school fashion.
Well, basically for the SAT, the way it is right now, the difficulty is that a lot of the questions sort of assume that the reader has certain background knowledge.
Mm-hmm.
And if the readers don't have that, they're sort of shooting in the dark trying to answer the questions because they don't know the context.
Right.
And a lot of what my book is about is just to provide the context. One really good example is a lot of kids today don't know about the early years of the AIDS epidemic.
Mm-hmm.
And there's one test passage that's taken from the Republican National Convention of 1992 when President George Bush was running for re-election.
Mm-hmm.
And a woman named Mary Fisher spoke at the convention, and she was saying that Bush, it was, you know, sort of pushing the compassionate conservatism, but also as a way to address criticisms about the Reagan and Bush administrations during the 80s
right.
about AIDS. And so, but because my students didn't understand that there had been such terrible prejudice against people who were diagnosed in their early years, that they were even denied treatment in hospitals. They were turned away. And during that, during the 92 election campaign, I actually found out that ACT UP activists, you know, people who are trying to get funding for the AIDS epidemic, they actually went and poured ashes of their dead friends and loved ones on the White House lawn and stuff like that. So it was a whole big thing.
Right, right.
And when a kid reads the speech today, if they don't already know how homophobic our country was at that point, they don't get the point of the message. They miss the essential thing, which is that we shouldn't treat people with AIDS any differently than we treat other people. And then she, in the speech, she references Pastor Niemöller, who spoke, I guess, at near the end of the World War II at the Nuremberg trials or something. But he's got this whole thing, you know, first they came for the communists, but I was not a communist, so I didn't worry. And then they came for the other people, and it wasn't me, and I didn't worry. And so then finally they came for me, and there wasn't anybody left. And she uses that little parable or story in her speech, and my students don't understand it.
Yeah.
They've never seen it before, and they don't get what she's talking about.
Right.
So what I did is I did a history of AIDS, but to establish the homophobia, I went back and I included LGBTQ stuff wherever it seemed relevant, like that they were singled out in the camps during World War II, and how they were singled out in the McCarthy era. And I included a photo of the Lavender protests. You know, it's a bunch of guys walking around in suits in the 1950s holding up a sign, you know, saying "Stop persecuting us" or whatever it says. I don't remember offhand. But to give that context so that children understand where the speech is coming from. And once they get it, once they understand everything I've just said, boom, 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 they get the whole thing right.
Yeah, that makes all the sense in the world.
Yeah.
But that was your teaching method. As I understand it, and I think I do, every state has a different curriculum or modification thereof.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what confuses me, whether we're being taught for the SATs or being taught for the jurisdiction. And I
understand. Okay.
Yeah.
What I think is that what I did, I didn't set out to write a political book at all. Well, that was the farthest thing from my mind.
Right.
I was trying to sort of put together a book that told in a readable way.
Mm-hmm.
All the historical information that, quote unquote, a well-educated adult should know.
Right.
Or, you know, sort of like what the grown-ups who decide what all the important stuff is, what they think you should know.
Right.
And so that was my guide. And then if it wasn't on the SAT, I left it out completely. If I had never seen a passage on it, I didn't go there.
Mm-hmm.
It got a little longer, some connective tissue. But I think the other problem is that now that history has become so contested,
yes,
it's very difficult to understand. I think once you start to look at that and you have to sort of sort through the discomfort that people feel with uncomfortable truths, and I think that once we sit down and we look at what happened, you know, you don't need to be political.
No, you
don't.
If you
look at, you know, what I worked out about the SAT is that their sort of narrative, if you will, the narrative arc for the history passages, what they want is for you to basically, they want to know that you've got the historical background, that you can make the correct inferences. The problem is once you pick a text that's difficult, I think where the test takers fall down and a lot of the test prep people fall down is that they don't know what students don't know.
Correct.
And what students don't know today is a surprising quantity.
Yeah.
And they haven't sort of picked up things like from the general air
right,
the way I did when I was a kid. And I think maybe it's because people are consuming their media privately.
Correct.
But they don't sort of get this general what's going on in the news and how it connects to stuff that used to happen.
Yeah,
and so they're just not as aware of current events or the world.
Well,
and the way they experience history instruction is somewhat random. Because there's no national curriculum, we don't know what any kid
correct,
has learned.
Correct.
So those are the problems I think the test is trying to deal with.
Yeah, and there's some major problems in that sense, because as kids and adults only knew what a few outlets were giving to them back when I was growing up. Now there's so many outlets and so many twists that they vary night and day. And,
right.
and that's difficult. But you made a good point that let's take smoking, for example. History shows that smoking was all over the world and everybody did it, and it was used to relax. The government handed them out to the troops, et cetera, et cetera. But mm-hmm. that's not the end of history, because kids today know that smoking is bad for you, that's where we are now. But you can't know where we are now unless you knew that there was a time when that fact was totally turned around. And that's
right.
a part of it. So you have to know the wrong history to know the good history, in
right.
a sense. So you got to know everything.
It's hard. I mean, when you write a book, you probably do six times more research and write five times more than ends up in the final piece.
Yeah. Okay.
Perfectly capable of spending a week on one paragraph.
Yes.
But the thing is, the way I did it, the way I've tried to sort it through, is I only included stuff if I had found it in a couple places.
Yes.
You know, if I had accounts that agreed.
Right.
And so I used encyclopedias and government websites.
Yeah.
I went into presidential libraries, and the National Park Service is an amazing trove also.
Mm-hmm.
And so what I did is I didn't put anything in unless I had verified it a couple different ways. And when there was disagreement about what had happened or what something meant, I tried simply to include what that disagreement was.
Mm-hmm.
And if it was about a controversy that's ongoing,
mm-hmm.
I simply said that this is ongoing. It hasn't yet been solved.
Gotcha.
So I wasn't, none of it was me trying to put my opinion forward.
Right.
Instead, it was trying to find the right stuff that kids need to understand what they're reading so that they can get the questions right.
Uh-huh. Gotcha.
Because even my smartest and best, most advanced SAT students have trouble on questions when they don't have the background.
Yes.
So that was it.
It's fascinating is what it is.
As I wrote, I became a whole lot more patriotic, and that was not something I had ever expected would happen.
Huh. Interesting.
You know, because you read all these things about, what our ideals are and what American democracy is supposed to be. And then so you get a lot of that stuff on the SAT, but then you get people who are saying, well, it's not working in this instance, or we have a problem here.
Yeah.
And so sorting through those and figuring out, okay, so, where are we living up to our ideals? Where do people think we haven't?
Yeah.
And, what do we do about that? Well, it seems to me that the answer is if you read all these documents, you believe all these documents, and you think that there should be equality and fairness for everybody. Once you start reading that stuff, it's very, very convincing. It's easy to see why the whole world wants, why so many countries modeled their governments on ours, something like 200 or something. And so it's easy to see the appeal and to feel very proud of who you are as an American. But I don't think that excuses you from dealing with the stuff that maybe some of our ancestors just didn't do such nice stuff.
Yeah. I mean, that's what happened. In somebody's mind.
The other final point that I think is very important to make is that when I was in school, I learned that the point of view and the perspective of the reader is very, very important.
Mm-hmm.
And I believe that, kids need to find themselves in their schooling. They need to see themselves, people who look like them in their classrooms and read about people like them. And so when I was I think a lot of the debates right now They're from the point of view of white people. And if you stop and you think about all the many, many kids who aren't white, and you realize their history has to be included too, because they're part of this country too.
Right.
So like on the SAT, you'll sometimes see a passage, there's one about the Chicano public art movement of the 1970s, and they painted up all these murals and stuff. And it was somewhat controversial, but then, you know, people did it. And so something like that, it's a past controversy about people trying to, you know, get their rights and get their piece of the American pie or whatever. But it's on the SAT because it's safely in the past, and so it's not going to upset anybody.
Right.
But if you've never read about that,
you've
been erased. If you're Chicano, right. If you're Mexican-American, and you never get to hear about what your people did in this country, then you haven't been given your fair history.
Correct.
And so my concern about all the politicization right now is that the kids whose stories are getting censored and left out, that they're going to be harmed by that.
Yeah.
And so I care about that. I care that they see themselves in what they read and understand how the things they're being asked relate to them.
Well, you know, I personally, any subject that isn't definitive, like science and reading and English or whatever, or language, let's call it, mathematics, those are definitives. Anything that is a matter of interpretation, I don't believe should be on the SATs.
Except that the problem with that.
Uh-huh.
Is when you test reading comprehension,
you
have to deal with things like nuances, irony,
right.
Understatement, allusions, metaphors, you know, other kinds of figures of speech. And so you have to be able to interpret there. But it's not the same as saying, oh, I can interpret a poem any way I want. You know, it's not that.
Right.
There are rules. I think a lot of trouble that people have with the humanities, with English and history and subjects like that, is that there are good interpretations and bad interpretations, and that your challenge is to find an interpretation that will hold up to scrutiny.
I suppose.
And so my method for research ever since I was in college is if you can find it in two places, it's good. If you can find it in three, you're golden.
Yeah.
If you can only find it in one, you probably shouldn't use it.
Well, I mean, someday maybe we'll get into a discussion about what are they actually for? Is it just entrance to college? I mean, that's a whole other ballgame.
Yeah, I think it's just that we need a national metric because we have no national standards.
Mm-hmm.
We don't have any kind of national curriculum. There's no agreement on what kids ought to be taught.
Mm-hmm.
And so when a college is trying to assess kids from all over the country, from all different school districts and states, and they've learned all different things, how do you decide which one of them is going to do well in your school? You need a metric that you can measure everybody on.
Correct.
And so that's why I think they have to keep having these tests, even if they're changing the format.
I guess. I mean, it's like teaching somebody a religion, and that's it. You have to teach them all religions so that they understand those variances.
Concept.
Yeah.
Right.
You're right. That's a good word. It's concept. It's not specifics.
Yeah. About ideas.
Right. Right. Okay. Well, we can't talk for more than 7 hours. So
we have to end this sometime.
But the book is available at this point, right?
Oh yeah. No, it's definitely out there.
All right. It's definitely out there.
You can get it at Amazon, Barnes & Noble, and there's a number of other platforms as well.
Now, if someone wanted to follow you and see what's going on in your head, how could they do that?
My website is historyaccordingtosat.com, and my email is elizabeth.beasinboyreau@gmail.com.
Perfect. Well, thank you for doing what you do, because someone had to do this, to be honest with you. It's about time that we just got off the block and started looking a little bit more in a larger perspective, and thank you for doing that. Well, that'll do it for me today. Thank you to my guests, and thank you to you for being here. I'll be back again on Monday with a brand new program. But until that time arrives, I wish you peace.